Chapter 28. Great passionate pulse of existence, unwarped, uncontorted, untrammeled by those creeds which futilely attempt to check what wisdom would be content to regulate. On their part they saw a great difference in him, a growing divergence from the angel Clara of former times. It was chiefly a difference in his manner that they noticed just now, particularly his brother's. He was getting to behave like a farmer. He flung his legs about. The muscles of his face had grown more expressive. His eyes looked as much information as his tongue spoke, and more. The manner of the scholar had nearly disappeared. Still more the manner of the drawing-room young man. A prig would have said that he had lost culture, and a prude that he had become coarse. Such was the contagion of domiciliary fellowship with the Talbothays nymphs and swains. After breakfast he walked with his two brothers, non-evangelical, well-educated, hallmarked young men, correct to their remotest fiber, such unimpeachable models as are turned out yearly by the lathe of a systematic tuition. They were both somewhat short-sighted, and when it was the custom to wear a single eyeglass and string, they wore a single eyeglass and string. When it was the custom to wear a double glass, they wore a double glass. When it was the custom to wear spectacles, they wore spectacles straightway, all without reference to the particular variety of defect in their own vision. When Wordsworth was enthroned, they carried pocket copies. And when Shelley was belittled, they allowed him to grow moldy on their shelves. When Correggio's Holy Families were admired, they admired Correggio's Holy Families. When he was decried in favor of Velasquez, they sedulously followed suit without any personal objection. If these two noticed angels' growing social ineptness, he noticed their growing mental limitations. Felix seemed to him all church, Cuthbert all college. His diocesan synod and visitations were the mainsprings of the world to the one, Cambridge to the other. Each brother candidly recognized that there were a few unimportant score of millions of outsiders in civilized society, persons who were neither university men nor churchmen, but they were to be tolerated, rather than reckoned with and respected. They were both dutiful and attentive sons, and were regular in their visits to their parents. Felix, though an offshoot from a far more recent point in the devolution of theology than his father, was less self-sacrificing and disinterested. More tolerant than his father of a contradictory opinion, in its aspect as a danger to its holder, he was less ready than his father to pardon it as a slight to his own teaching. Cuthbert was, upon the whole, the more liberal-minded, though, with greater subtlety, he had not so much heart. As they walked along the hillside, Angel's former feeling revived in him that, whatever their advantages by comparison with himself, neither saw or set forth life as it really was lived. Perhaps, as with many men, their opportunities of observation were not so good as their opportunities of expression. Neither had an adequate conception of the complicated forces at work outside the smooth and gentle current in which they and their associates floated. Neither saw the difference between local truth and universal truth, that what the inner world said in their clerical and academic hearing was quite a different thing from what the outer world was thinking. "I suppose it is farming, or nothing for you now, my dear fellow," Felix was saying, among other things, to his youngest brother, as he looked through his spectacles at the distant fields with sad austerity. "And, therefore, we must make the best of it. But I do entreat you to endeavor to keep as much as possible in touch with moral ideals. Farming, of course, means roughing it externally, but high thinking may go with plain living, nevertheless." "Of course it may," said Angel. "Has it not proved 1900 years ago, if I may trespass upon your domain a little? Why should you think, Felix, that I am likely to drop my high thinking and my moral ideals?" "Well, I fancied, from the tone of your letters and our conversation, it may be fancy, only that you were somehow losing intellectual grasp. Hasn't it struck you, Cuthbert?" "Now, Felix," said Angel dryly, "we are very good friends, you know, each of us treading our allotted circles. But if it comes to intellectual grasp, I think you, as a contented dogmatist, had better leave mine alone, and inquire what has become of yours. They returned down the hill to dinner, which was fixed at any time at which their father's and mother's morning work in the parish usually concluded. Convenience as regarded afternoon callers was the last thing to enter into the consideration of unselfish Mr. and Mrs. Clare, though the three sons were sufficiently in unison on this matter to wish that their parents would conform a little to modern notions. The walk had made them hungry. Angel in particular, who was now an outdoor man, accustomed to the profuse tapes and empty of the dairyman's somewhat coarsely laden table. But neither of the old people had arrived, and it was not till the sons were almost tired of waiting that their parents entered. The self-denying pair had been occupied in coaxing the appetites of some of their sick parishioners, whom they, somewhat inconsistently, tried to keep imprisoned in the flesh, their own appetites being quite forgotten. The family sat down to table, and a frugal meal of cold viands was deposited before them. Angel looked round for Mrs. Crick's black puddings, which he had directed to be nicely grilled as they did them at the dairy, and of which he wished his father and mother to appreciate the marvelous herbal savors as highly as he did himself. "Ah, you are looking for the black puddings, my dear boy," observed Claire's mother. "But I am sure you will not mind doing without them, as I am sure your father, and I shall not, when you know the reason. I suggested to him that we should take Mrs. Crick's kind present to the children of the man who can earn nothing just now because of his attacks of delirium tremens, and he agreed that it would be a great pleasure to them, so we did." "Of course," said Angel cheerfully, looking round for the mead. "I found the mead so extremely alcoholic," continued his mother, "that it was quite unfit for use as a beverage, but as valuable as rum or brandy in an emergency, so I have put it in my medicine closet." "We never drink spirits at this table, on principle," added his father. "But what shall I tell the dairyman's wife?" said Angel. "The truth, of course," said his father. "I rather wanted to say we enjoyed the mead and the black puddings very much. She is a kind, jolly sort of body, and is sure to ask me directly I return." "You cannot, if we did not," Mr. Clare answered lucidly. "Ah, no, though that mead was a drop of pretty tipple." "A what?" said Cuthbert and Felix both. "Oh, 'tis an expression they use down at Talbothays," replied Angel, blushing. He felt that his parents were right in their practice, if wrong in their want of sentiment, and said no more. XXVI, it was not till the evening, after family prayers, that Angel found opportunity of broaching to his father one or two subjects near his heart. He had strung himself up to the purpose, while kneeling behind his brothers on the carpet, studying the little nails in the heels of their walking boots. When the service was over, they went out of the room with their mother, and Mr. Clare and himself were left alone. The young man first discussed with the elder his plans for the attainment of his position as a farmer on an extensive scale either in England or in the colonies. His father then told him that, as he had not been put to the expense of sending Angel up to Cambridge, he had felt it his duty to set by a sum of money every year towards the purchase or lease of land for him someday, that he might not feel himself unduly slighted. "As far as worldly wealth goes," continued his father, "you will no doubt stand far superior to your brothers in a few years." This considerateness on old Mr. Clare's part led Angel onward to the other and dearer subject. He observed to his father that he was then 26, and that when he should start in the farming business he would require eyes in the back of his head to see to all matters. Someone would be necessary to superintend the domestic labors of his establishment whilst he was afield. Would it not be well, therefore, for him to marry? His father seemed to think this idea not unreasonable. And then Angel put the question, "What kind of wife do you think would be best for me as a thrifty, hard-working farmer?" "A truly Christian woman," who will be a help and a comfort to you in your goings out and your comings in. Beyond that, it really matters little. Such an one can be found, indeed, my earnest-minded friend and neighbor, Dr. Chand, but ought she not primarily to be able to milk cows, churn good butter, make immense cheeses, know how to sit hens and turkeys and rear chickens, to direct a field of laborers in an emergency, and estimate the value of sheep and calves? Yes, a farmer's wife. Yes, certainly. It would be desirable. Mr. Clare, the elder, had plainly never thought of these points before. Was going to add, he said, that for a pure and saintly woman you will not find one more to your true advantage, and certainly not more to your mother's mind and my own, than your friend Mercy, whom you used to show a certain interest in. It is true that my neighbor Chant's daughter had lately caught up the fashion of the younger clergy round about us for decorating the communion table altar, as I was shocked to hear her call it one day with flowers and other stuff on festival occasions. But her father, who is quite as opposed to such flummery as I, says that can be cured. It is a mere girlish outbreak which, I am sure, will not be permanent. Yes, yes. Mercy is good and devout, I know. But, Father, don't you think that a young woman equally pure and virtuous as Miss Chant, but one who, in place of that lady's ecclesiastical accomplishments, understands the duties of farm life as well as a farmer himself, would suit me infinitely better? His father persisted in his conviction that a knowledge of a farmer's wife's duties came second to a Pauline view of humanity. And the impulsive angel, wishing to honor his father's feelings, and to advance the cause of his heart at the same time, grew specious. He said that fate or providence had thrown in his way a woman who possessed every qualification to be the helpmate of an agriculturist, and was decidedly of a serious turn of mind. He would not say whether or not as he had attached herself to the sound low church school of his father, but she would probably be open to conviction on that point. She was a regular churchgoer of simple faith, honest-hearted, receptive, intelligent, graceful to a degree, chaste as a vestal, and, in personal appearance, exceptionally beautiful. Is she of a family such as you would care to marry into a lady, in short? Asked his startled mother, who had come softly into the study during the conversation. She is not what in common parlance is called a lady, said Angel, unflinchingly, for she is a cottager's daughter, as I am proud to say. But she is a lady, nevertheless in feeling and nature. Mercy Chant is of a very good family. Pooh! What's the advantage of that, mother? Said Angel quickly. How is family to avail the wife of a man who has to rough it as I have, and shall have to do? Mercy is accomplished. And accomplishments have their charm, returned his mother, looking at him through her silver spectacles. As to external accomplishments, what will be the use of them in the life I am going to lead? While as to her reading, I can take that in hand. She'll be apt pupil enough, as you would say, if you knew her. She's brimful of poetry, actualized poetry, if I may use the expression. She lives what paper poets only write. And she is an unimpeachable Christian, I am sure, perhaps of the very tribe, genus, and species you desire to propagate. Oh, Angel, you are mocking. Mother, I beg pardon. But as she really does attend church almost every Sunday morning, and is a good Christian girl, I am sure you will tolerate any social shortcomings for the sake of that quality, and feel Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.